The Ukraine story this week contains a jarring contradiction. President Zelensky has declared that ending the war is possible and is calling on Russia to negotiate, which is his biggest stated diplomatic push since the early months of the conflict. At the same time, Ukraine has launched drone barrages striking targets across a dozen Russian regions, and Zelensky says Russia fired 1,400 drones at Ukraine in a single week. This isn't a ceasefire atmosphere. This is maximum pressure diplomacy, where both sides are trying to negotiate from a position of demonstrated military capability rather than mutual exhaustion.
The Crimea dimension is strategically significant. Zelensky is citing intelligence showing that Russian administrators in occupied Crimea are privately acknowledging they can't cope with Ukraine's strikes, specifically a deepening fuel and logistics crisis. If accurate, that means Ukraine's long-range strike campaign is achieving something it's been trying to do for 2 years. Make the occupation of Crimea operationally costly enough that it becomes a liability for Moscow rather than an asset. The peninsula's road and rail connections to mainland Russia have been repeatedly targeted, and if fuel and supplies can't move reliably, the Russian military presence there becomes harder to sustain.
And then there's the Pentagon decision that has gone somewhat underreported. The Department of Defense allowed $910 million in previously authorized Ukraine military aid to expire without disbursement. This is not a small figure, and it's not a bureaucratic accident. Military aid packages have legal expiration mechanisms, and choosing not to disburse before a deadline is a choice. The timing, while Zelensky is making diplomatic overtures, sends a mixed signal from the U.S. government. If the White House is simultaneously trying to pressure Russia through Ukraine's military capability and applying pressure on Zelensky to negotiate, letting aid expire is one lever.
The Putin-Lukashenko meeting happening, while what's described as a Ukraine relay deadline expires, adds another layer. Lukashenko's position in Belarus has been sustained largely through Russian support since the 2020 protests, and his continued political survival depends on Putin's backing. These meetings are rarely purely social. When Putin and Lukashenko meet in the context of active hostilities, it typically involves coordination on military logistics, particularly the use of Belarusian territory for supply lines or potential strike corridors. The relay deadline expiration suggests some kind of coordinated timeline that we don't have full visibility into.
The Kremlin's response to a soldier's viral mutiny threat is a smaller story, but a telling one. The fact that it rose to the level of a formal Kremlin response suggests the clip circulated widely enough that ignoring it was not viable. Russian authorities are clearly monitoring the domestic social media environment for signs of dissent within the military. And when something penetrates broadly enough to require official comment, it suggests the underlying sentiment it represents has traction. The Prigozhin precedent is obviously on everyone's mind.
And the cyber attack dimension. Russian hackers have now been linked to a $2.5 billion cyber attack on Jaguar Land Rover. That's an extraordinary figure for a single corporate intrusion. For context, JLR's total revenue in a typical year runs around 22 to 23 billion pounds, so a $2.5 billion impact would represent a substantial portion of a single year's revenue. These attacks serve multiple purposes. They generate economic disruption in Western economies. They can be used to extract intellectual property, particularly around EV and autonomous vehicle technology. And they provide leverage in diplomatic contexts. The attribution to Russian actors, if confirmed, is another data point in the pattern of Russian hybrid warfare running in parallel with the conventional conflict in Ukraine.
The GOP senator blocking Trump's $88 billion war funding package over hurricane relief is also a Ukraine-adjacent story worth flagging. When a Republican senator uses Ukraine funding as leverage for domestic disaster relief, it illustrates how the politics of Ukraine's support within the GOP have evolved. The senator's calculation is that the administration's stated commitment to Ukraine is politically useful as a bargaining chip for constituents who need hurricane assistance. Whether that trade is made or not, the willingness to make it publicly represents a significant shift from the unified Republican-Ukraine support posture of 2 years ago.